The following edition of Sioux Valley Voice was recorded live at 10 a.m. on Wednesday, July 16, 2014. My guests were Joe Page and Larry Hutton of the Northern Susitna Institute. We discussed the current state of NSI programs, the upcoming Key Ingredients Festival, and took listener calls. The next Sioux Valley Voice will broadcast live at 10 a.m. on Wednesday, July 30th. Good morning. You're listening to KTNA 88.9 FM Talkeetna, community radio for the Upper Susitna Valley. The time is now 10 o'clock, and it's time for Sioux Valley Voice. I'm your host, Philip Manning, and today we'll be discussing summer programs at Northern Susitna Institute, including the Key Ingredients Expedition. My guests are Joe Page, Executive Director at NSI, and Larry Hutton, Program Coordinator at NSI. If you want to join in on our conversation, you can do so by calling 733-1200, or you can send an email to dj@ktna.org. So first, good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Philip. It's a pleasure to be here.
And good morning, Larry.
Good morning.
So, just to get started, as I was thinking about this, I realized I think most people in the area are familiar, at least, that NSI exists and that things often happen there, that there's usually something going on at least once a week over there. But there may not be quite as much understanding of kind of what all that entails. So, I mean, if we can just kind of start with where NSI began as compared to where it is now, because, I mean, in a relatively short period of time, it's grown a fair bit.
Well, sure. NSI started, believe it or not, in the mid-90s as a educational think tank. And basically, there were a group of us who were recognizing the need to have more interface with the schools and the community, especially at that point, the business community, because we felt like, we had a dynamic community here, and it was valuable to try to engage them and what's going on in the schools. Well, we got caught up in everybody's world, and so it kind of languished for quite a few years until several of us retired from the teaching profession. But, retired was only, we didn't really retire. We just stepped away briefly, and we continued to talk about the fact that we felt like hands-on learning and getting your hands dirty as you're learning, that experience was really valuable. So basically, we sponsored a series of educational symposiums in our community in the late aughts, I guess you would call them. And out of those programs and that whole the series of symposiums, we discovered that priorities were expanding opportunities for young people, especially to have more career exploration opportunities and vocational training. That was one thing. The other thing was our community was really clamoring for more hands-on learning opportunities. And so using that as the foundation, we decided that it was time to incorporate as a nonprofit and call ourselves technically and officially Northern Susitna Institute, a nonprofit organization. In that process, another organization here in our community called Classroom with a View, which was already a nonprofit, said, we're kind of doing similar things that you're doing. And so we feel like it'd be smart for us to combine our resources. And how about if we just merge our organizations and move forward together? And after due deliberation, we decided that was a great idea. And the same thing, as it turns out, was true with Alaska Folk School. A group of folks here in our community had visited some other folk schools around the country, and they were realizing that folk school niche was something that was really valuable for what our community was interested in. And so we engaged them. So basically, at this point right now, Northern Susitna Institute is the umbrella organization for Classroom with a View, which is an organization that is focusing on education for young people, and then Alaska Folk School, which is a program that is intergenerational in nature. You know, we work with kids from 4 to 94, and we try to carry on folk tradition and share learning with one another. In addition to that, of course, Northern Sioux Sitna Institute is still another organization that, even though they're the parent organization, we run lots of programs as well. And today, in the course of our discussion today, we'll talk about some of those things.
Mm-hmm. All right. And so you've been involved since the very beginning then?
Yes, I've been involved from the beginning, and I backed into the executive director position here a couple of years ago, and you know, I think nobody else raised their hand, and I don't think I even raised my hand, but somehow it fell on my shoulders.
Yeah, that'll happen. And Larry, at what point did you get involved with NSI?
So I've been in Talkeetna since early May of this summer, and heard about the position earlier in the spring when I was rounding out my season in Colorado. Heard about the opportunity to be the program coordinator, and was interested in coming to Talkeetna, so sent in my resume, and a few days later I was talking to Joe. So, and it's been a great experience so far.
Okay. And so, did you have previous experience with an organization like this, or is this kind of some on the job learning?
Well, first let me say that Northern Sioux Sitna Institute in its full capacity partnering with the other organizations is completely unique from anything I've not only been involved with but have ever heard of. So the answer to that question in long form is no.
Okay.
I had some previous experience with other nonprofit organizations such as radio, while we're on the topic, as well as some other civic organizations to do with kids and disease prevention and things of that nature. Okay. So I had dabbled in the nonprofit world before, but certainly nothing to this extent.
Okay. And so now you're in position here. You've been here for a few months. Is it looking like something you want to stick with for a while, you think?
That's yet to be determined, but I will say that daily the hooks sink deeper.
That will happen. So one other thing I wanted to touch on while we're kind of talking about NSI as an entity is fundraising. And, you know, I moved here about 3 years ago, and there's been, for most of that time, there's been a little sign outside of out front of the NSI building with a tree on it to kind of measure fundraising amounts. And just earlier this summer or late spring, that tree got painted all the way the rest of the way in and got finished off. So, Joe, what does that signify then for the organization?
For me personally, it meant no more sleepless nights. You know, what it meant for our organization is that, you know, we had been leasing the 3-acre property there where NSI currently exists for a couple of years with the anticipation that we'd be able to raise enough capital to purchase that outright. And lo and behold, thanks to the generous support of our community, the Rasmussen Foundation, and even the state of Alaska contributed to this through their capital improvement project program. We were able to get over the top, and actually we now own that property, and we're just excited about that. We're also in the process of making some major renovations to the facility. We're putting in handicapped bathrooms. We're making all the door legal egress out of the all the exits. And a big exciting thing this weekend, the Home Depot Corporation is coming in, and we're putting down laminate flooring throughout the building instead of that, shall we say, antique or used carpeting that's been in there since when we moved in.
Yeah, definitely secondhand carpet. I was going to mention that because I just read on our announcements page that there is some free carpet available. As long as you're willing to come and rip it up, basically. Okay. And so when you say Home Depot's coming out and putting in flooring, is that something like, are they doing that as a charitable thing?
They're doing it as a charitable thing. And
okay.
I think that's one of the things. I think, NSI has, you know, it's this community is vibrant in many, many ways. And I think we sometimes joke about the fact that we have 41 nonprofits in the KTNA listening audience. So it was a little challenging to find the niche that NSI should slot into. But, you know, I think effectively we have. And one of the things we pride ourselves on is that we like to partner with every single organization that we can, both private and nonprofit, because we feel like our main thrust, again, is education. And I think that's a thread that runs through almost everything that everybody does. So.
Right. I think you'll find that in a lot of the mission statements of those 41 nonprofits, including ours.
Exactly.
So, okay. So let's talk a little bit about the programs. And the ones I've got written down here, Folk School, Classroom with a View, and then the SEAL Academy is the third one I've got written down. So, Larry, we can just kind of get – so with Folk School, what's going on in Folk School this summer?
There's a lot going on in Folk School, especially at the moment as we gear up for the Key Ingredients Festival, which I know we're going to talk about more later in the hour. But there are a myriad of classes that we have on the books. We've got some classes for making jams and jellies, how to can said items. we've got some painting courses, some sketching courses. We're rounding out the end of a pottery class that was an ongoing class this entire week. We'll be done with on Saturday. We're doing some apron fish printing, if I understand correctly. So, yeah, the Folk School is alive and well and very active at the moment, so okay. We're excited about it.
And so if, say, someone here in town has a particular skill that they haven't yet put on any sort of class or anything for, how would they go about that if they wanted to do that?
That's a great question. So if you go to northernassistantinstitute.org and or alaskafolkschool.org, there's a link titled Get Involved, if I'm saying it correctly. I believe it says Get Involved. And then under that tab, there's a Become an Instructor link. Mm-hmm. So you can click on that and essentially apply to become an instructor. Simply applying doesn't guarantee that we'll take on you know, what you want to do, but it does get the process started. And if it's something that we feel like fits with our mission and that there will be an interest from the community, then it's something that we'll explore doing from there.
Okay. So it's very much kind of an open door situation.
Absolutely.
Okay. And then actually, before we get to Classroom with a View, I want to remind our listeners, you're listening to Sioux Valley Voice. My guests today are Joe Page and Larry Hutton with Northern Susitna Institute. And if you want to join in our conversation, you can call 733-1200 or send us an email, dj@ktna.org. And actually, also, I put up a Facebook post, so if you want to comment on that, I'll be checking that through the hour as well. So, looking at Classroom with a View, which, as Joe explained, is kind of aimed toward school-age kids, basically, you know, some of the younger folks. What sort of programs are you looking at in the summertime for those kids?
Well, currently we are rounding out our 4 weeks of day camps for community children ages 7 to 14. The younger ones are called Wild Youngers, fittingly, and then the older ones are called Wild Wonders. So we're finishing up, like I said, that fourth week with our last session of Wild Wonders, which are kids age 10 to 14. And they've been taking part in all sorts of interesting art projects and outdoor projects this week, including building emergency backcountry shelters, doing all sorts of painting. They even planted a small garden out in front of NSI. Yesterday they did a knot tying class with the Park Service, and I saw with my own eyes a 60-pound child move a truck through some creative rigging with rope and pulleys.
Nice.
So it was pretty exciting.
Well, that's cool. So a lot of practical type skills involved there.
Absolutely.
One of the things I would add, we've been really fortunate in having Klaus and Laura come over from Trapper Creek and demonstrate fire building, which is always one of the most fascinating things, is starting a fire just from scratch without, you know, the implements that we usually use
right.
to get something going. And they do a wonderful job of that, and it's really fun.
Okay. So we've got you know, you said folk schools, kind of multi-generational classroom with a view, is, you said, all the way up to like 14, at least for this day camp portion. And then there's SEAL Academy, which I admittedly I know a little bit about, but I don't know all that much about. But I know that it involves internships and that sort of thing. So I don't know, Joe, if you want to explain kind of what's going on there.
The SEAL Academy grew out of this need to do some more career, have young people have the opportunities for career exploration and learning some vocational training, because that's something that Lower Valley, they have some excellent resources down below, but, you know, for our people living in the Northern Valley, it's just virtually impossible unless you want to sit in a vehicle for 4 hours a day just to get transported to and fro.
Right.
So, you know, one of the things we identified was that we have rich resources right here in our community, and we have experts in many, 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 many fields. And so basically we've established a program, an internship program for young people, whereby we partner them with in an area of their particular interest. And it's a pretty rigorous experience. They are, you know, looking to see how what this career is all about, working side by side with these experts. They're keeping notes. They have to complete a project in order to get credit. But at the end of this experience, they are able to get high school credit that is then recognized throughout the country, and it can go on transcript, and that's a pretty fabulous thing.
Okay.
The other thing that we're developing right now, it's in the process, we feel like another thing that would be really valuable is to set up a job shadowing experience for young people, whereby, you know, right now we're just asking kids from their own experience to pick an internship experience. But we feel like we'd like to set up opportunities for kids to first sample 6 or 8 different options on a very light level, maybe 1 or 2 days in each of these locations, so that they could get an idea about what is going on as opposed to what goes on in their mind. And so that then gives them a little more background in order to determine, okay, I think I'd like to then have an internship experience in this particular place.
Okay.
So that's a program that the SEAL Academy is working to develop right now as we speak. I would also say that one thing that we have done is that we are, after being in operation for a couple of years, you know how an organization can be better organized. So basically, we have decided that, in our interest, we're merging the SEAL Academy and Classroom with a View under one heading. Because in both of those cases, they were targeting young people. Mm-hmm. And we just felt like it's silly to have, even though they started out as separate groups in separate organizations, we just felt like, well, let's put them together. And because the director of the SEAL Academy could never remember what SEAL, C-E-A-L, stood for, we've decided to call that group now the Classroom with a View. And it also has a lot more, you know, appeal, I'm sure, to young people than SEAL. So, you know, the one thing that's pretty exciting for us also is that we will now, NSI is beginning August, in the first part of August, NSI will become accredited as a supplementary school, which means that the classes that we offer and have been aligned with state and national standards will be able to give credit directly to kids that will be transferable to anywhere in the country.
Now, at what level is that?
This would be, you know, primarily the credit, you know, if you're using Carnegie units, that would be at the high school level. Mm-hmm. So, you know, freshmen, sophomores, juniors, and seniors who are using that Carnegie system to get credits will be able to offer them credit for that. And, you know, we really didn't touch upon two of the other programs that Classroom with a View offers, and these are the main ones. We have a program called Denali Adventure, which is basically a semester-long integrated curriculum course where we combine the study of Alaska history, Alaska literature, ecology of the boreal forest, physical fitness, and leadership. And so students do prep preparatory work prior to going. In the last few years, we've had kids go up on Kasugi Ridge for a 10-day backpack leadership experience.
Okay.
So effectively, high school kids are able to get 5 semester credits for this experience, and it's a semester-long course.
Okay.
The same thing, we're developing the same thing as in the Sonoran Desert. So basically, the same concept would be students could get literature, history, ecology of the Sonoran Desert, and they could also get credit and then go down and spend, I think we've got 17 days planned down there, an experience, including, you know, backcountry experiences, going to the Desert Museum and all things of that nature. In the past, Classroom with Views also taken kids to Mexico for various experiences, including Spanish immersion. So these are all just things in the offing that are more targeting the high school kids.
Right.
We're really thrilled. I think last year we had one Wild Wonder course with kids 10 to 14, and this year it's been overwhelming with the response. We have 4 camps this year, and we're real excited that, you know, we're working with younger people, and we hope to develop that into helping them understand these other things.
Okay. And you said 4 camps. How many total kids is that?
Somewhere in the range of about 50 to 55 kids total.
Wow.
Some of the kids are taking both weeks of the course because the first one was more geared toward science and outdoor exploration. The second one was more geared toward art.
Okay.
So we have some people from the community who are obviously interested in all of those things. So they signed up for both weeks.
50 to 55 kids. That's got to be most of the kids between 10 and 14 in this town, right? or getting close to it at least. Well, that's really interesting. So when you talk about these like 10-day long, the Denali Adventure Program, and then looking at the Sonoran Desert potentially in the future, you know, what sort of cost are we looking at for families looking to participate?
You know, that's a really good question. I wish I had it right here in front of me.
Sure.
But for the for that, we have there's 2 components here. One is to get to sign up for the coursework, and typically we've been charging $200 per credit.
Mm.
So if a student wants to get the credit, which is optional, they don't have to take. They have to take 1 course in order to go on the Denali Adventure, and 1 course to go on the Sonoran Adventure. But they can take up to 5. And for homeschool students, their allotment can cover the cost of those things.
Okay.
On top of that, of course, is the true adventure, and I believe the Denali Adventure is for the 10-day course, $1,500, roughly. And for the one in the Sonoran Desert, I believe is about $2,100.
Okay. And so, are there opportunities for scholarships and stuff like that for?
Absolutely, we have a very generous donor who has designated scholarship funds for those who can't afford the program. And I think that's one of the things that we really believe in strongly is that, you know, we want to reach out and give kids who don't normally have opportunities to be involved in programs like this, to give them that opportunity. And that's one of the driving forces that had to start this whole program in the get-go.
Okay. And I got to ask, why the Sonoran Desert?
Well, for one thing, we have a place down in Arizona.
Okay.
And we have... Arizona starts with an A and ends with an A, and Alaska starts with an A and ends with an A.
So the next program will be in Alabama.
It could be. Well, the other thing I found interesting, last year, I think some people were here when Jim Carrey came and talked about the Dena'ina people and about the Athabascan language, and we looked at a T-shirt that he made, and of course, the Athabascan people, we sometimes, you know, laugh about it, but if you'll notice... The Athabascan, the Dene people also, there's the Apache people down in Arizona also speak Dene. So there's a cultural heritage of people migrating from Alaska to the Southwest.
Yeah, no, actually, I learned that recently. Actually, the Navajo as well, and maybe not from the Dene, but definitely from a bearing tribe.
Exactly. And plus, I think the other part of it is just the extremes. You know, I think if you look at Alaska, it's definitely a land of extremes, and as is the Sonoran Desert
That's
down
true.
In Arizona. and to be able to have those, and a lot of our focus is on watersheds. And okay. I think we're taking a look at the Susitna River watershed and all the things that are going on in the, in this watershed. And then the same thing down there, it's it certainly is the complete opposite aspect of what is the watershed in the desert.
Right.
And I think it's just great to have that whole perspective from one extreme to the other.
I guess on the topic of talking about watersheds and the Susitna watersheds, one of the things y'all have started doing more recently is these monthly discussions on various things to do with the Susitna River. And a lot of that, obviously right now, a lot of the discussion centers around the Susitna-Watonna project. And so where, as an organization, where do you kind of walk that educational line between advocacy and information? Because it's pretty well known that most people in this town have fairly strong opinions on that project.
We welcome all opinions. You know, I think that is the nature of education, and we feel like our job is to solely focus on education and bring in, you know, let people talk, share their ideas, and we trust people to sort it all out on their own and figure out what's going on. But we were really thrilled to partner with the Susitna River Coalition and have those series of talks. I was able to attend most of them, and you know, I found some really fascinating things I had no idea about. So we hope to continue that whole project again next year.
Okay, great. So I think that covers most of the programs. Larry, is there anything I've missed?
Not currently that we're currently taking part in. We do have some future programs that we could talk about if you'd like later in the hour or now.
I have some time slotted out for that a little bit later on. We're getting fairly close to the top of the hour, or bottom of the hour, rather. So I just want to remind everyone you're listening to Sioux Valley Voice. My guests today are Joe Page and Larry Hutton of NSI. If you want to join in on the conversation, if you have any questions or comments for these gentlemen, you can call 733-1200 or send us an email at dj@ktna.org, or you can leave a comment on our Facebook page. Let's go ahead and take our bottom of the hour break here, and we'll be back in just a few minutes, and we'll be talking about the upcoming Key Ingredients exhibition and some plans for the future as well. So stay tuned. We're back. You're listening to Sioux Valley Voice. I'm your host, Philip Manning. My guests today, Joe Page and Larry Hutton from Northern Susitna Institute. And during the break, we did get a caller, and it is Ellie Henke, who is a regular caller to the show here, and she has a question about NSI and Talkeetna Community Schools and the relationship therewith. So go ahead, Ellie. Oh, maybe go ahead, Ellie. Ellie, are you there? Oh, we may.
No, I'm on hold.
Oh, no, no, you're here now. Can you hear me now? We can hear you, Ellie. Can you hear us?
No, I just came on.
Okay. Well, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, just calling in, letting you folks know, boy, I'm a big fan of NSI. I love attending a lot of the different events that go on there, all the way from cardboard boat races to Friday lecture series and crafter day during the winter, and really appreciate everything that they're doing for our community. I'm also a big fan of Talkeetna Community Schools that goes on at the elementary school, and have attended a lot of their classes. And I know from my own perspective, this is probably more with the folk school than anything else, but I know for myself, I tend to take classes at Talkeetna Community Schools because they're, for me, more affordable. And I was wondering if Joe could maybe talk about how NSI meshes with Talkeetna Community Schools, or if there's any competition conflict, or if it meshes. I know I'm one that has to choose between the two of them, and if he could talk about that a little bit.
Okay, thanks, Ellie.
Sure. You know, we've supported the community schools through the years because it's an excellent program and a great way for people to be introduced to things. We've seen that. There's some limitations to the community schools, especially because it has to happen during the school hours. And so we feel like one of the things that NSI and the folk school in particular can do is we can offer programs and courses any time we want. We're not limited by using a facility that has to be closed up at certain times. You know, other things that we do is, for example, we held a rocket mass heater course that was basically 3 days running, and it, you know, took the whole space the whole time, and so we didn't have to start and stop at a particular time. It was a kind of a course that could happen without interruption. Those are the kinds of things that we feel like we want to develop instead of, say, a two-hour course that would happen at community schools. We see opportunities for expanding that into more comprehensive and more detailed.
Okay.
At the same time, you know, there's sometimes some courses, proposals come in, and we refer them to the community schools because we feel like that would be a more appropriate setting. Mm-hmm. Of course, the other thing is we operate all year round, and the community schools only operates during the school year, and even then, over the holidays and other times, they're closed.
So you're saying there's different community niches there that are being filled.
Sure, and okay. There's some overlap. Sure, that goes without saying. But for the most part, you know, we try to cooperate and share what we have with everybody.
Because I taught a class that Ellie attended at for Talkeetna Community Schools last fall, and it was a lot of fun. So, okay. Well, hopefully, you still on the line, Ellie?
Yep.
Did that answer your question?
Yeah, that does. And because I know I'm a big supporter of both of them, and it's nice to have folks to be aware that both of them exist and have different purposes to them.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thanks for the call.
Great. Thanks, Joe.
All right. So let me. Not ideal situation with where the phone units are located here, but so thanks, Ellie, for the call. And yeah, Talkeetna Community Schools is definitely another program that we ends up getting talked about a lot on the air here, just because there's pretty much always an announcement during the school year about what's going on over there. So to talk about what's coming up at NSI, the big thing right now, and it's actually gotten some attention as it's going on in Palmer at the moment, is this Key Ingredients Festival, which, as I understand it, is part of the Smithsonian Touring Exhibition Program. So I guess we'll just start with a brief overview, and then we can go into details on different kind of different aspects and what it's actually going to end up looking like here in town. So, Larry, if you want to, if you just give us the brief capsule of what we're looking at with this Key Ingredients.
Certainly. So, as you said, it's getting some attention down in Palmer at the moment. And Key Ingredients, the full title is Key Ingredients, America by Food. And it's a traveling exhibit hosted by the Smithsonian Institution, and we are lucky enough to have it coming to Talkeetna for 6 weeks, starting on Friday, August the 1st, and concluding on the 13th of September. And the basic structure of it is that each week during those 6 weeks will have a different theme. A couple of examples are the art of food, the joy of food, the history of food, etc. There's much more information available in detail on our website and also at the various information posting stations around the community if you keep your eyes keenly focused on those as you pass by. But as I said, it's a 6 week program, and there are a lot of very interesting discussions that will be going on in the form of lectures, group discussions. As we spoke about earlier, some Alaska Folk School classes. So we're very excited about it, and we've been preparing for it very diligently and are looking forward to it starting soon.
Okay. And so, my understanding, I read a little bit up about this beforehand, and they've been going kind of state to state, and Alaska's the last stop as they head westward. So is there, how much of a local focus is there within their program? Do they rely on the community to kind of supply that? Joe?
Absolutely. What the format is, basically there will be a standing exhibit over housed at NSI for the entire 6 weeks. And there's it's been organized by the Smithsonian Institute, and it'll be on display that entire time. But as Larry was saying, we've worked with Denali Arts Council, the Historical Society, the Susitna River Coalition, lots of local businesses and individuals to put together a very comprehensive program that is spinning off of that the exhibition. And so, for example, as Larry was saying, the second weekend, we've got the Art of Food, and there will be a painting, oil painting class with Tony Crocetto, Still Life with Gusto, and you know I think there will you know will that will be going on at NSI. There will be a Bon Appetit art show at the Denali Arts Council at the Sheldon Hangar and at Flying Squirrel Bakery and restaurant. There will also be a show that evening called Eating Alaska, and there it's about a film about a vegetarian who moves to Alaska and marries a commercial fisherman and hunter. And so that, you know, the second weekend of the whole festival will be focused on art and how food and art interface.
Okay.
So, you know, each, as Larry was saying, different weekends we're going to have different a different focus, but there's also the standing exhibit will be on the entire time.
Okay, and so that standing exhibit is that, and we're not actually broadcasting from the beach. There just happens to be a seagull outside the studio right now. But that standing exhibit, is that more of a nationwide kind of thing, or is it kind of standard everywhere they go?
That is the more nationwide focus, and as we mentioned earlier, Key Ingredients is a traveling exhibit, and this exhibit is one of three that are available, the one that's about food. So it's going to be set up, if you can imagine, museum style, on standing partitions, if you will, and it will be available from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. daily at NSI.
Okay.
Admission is free. Donations are welcome, however. and it'll be a self-guided tour of the exhibit. We will have volunteers and staff alike available to help guide guests through, should they have questions or further interests. But like I said, that'll be open to the public starting on Saturday, August the 2nd.
Okay, so free admission, donations welcome, just like the real, Smithsonian Museum. That's pretty much how they work as well. Okay, and so as part of this, I mean, I know you mentioned there's the art and food. Are there going to be? I mean, are there cooking classes involved here for things? Or
We have a couple of sourdough courses.
Okay.
You know, since we...
is that sourdough in the literal or the figurative sense?
Both.
Okay.
You know, we've got... Anita Golton is going to do a class on sourdough. And then we also have, as part of a series of talks, maybe take it away.
Right. So the talks that Joe's referring to, if you're familiar with the popular speaker series TED, mm-hmm. In the spirit of our festival being about food, our director of the Alaska Folk School, Diane Zigner, came up with Fed Talks. So we'll be hosting a series of five talks. And to point to what you were asking about, there is one called Sourdough Secrets that's going to be happening on Thursday, August the 28th. A couple of other examples are how to cast a that Sourdough Secrets is going to be delivered by Seth Klein.
Okay.
We've got some about one called How to Strengthen Alaska's Food System by Danny Constantine, one called How to Cast a Rhubarb Leaf by Holly Stinson.
Okay.
So above all, they are all food-centric topics. The one I personally believe will be the most interesting for my own personal hobbies and interests is we're doing one about the history of the history and culture of mountaineering food.
Okay.
And so we're really excited about it. We'll have another flyer up about just those Fed talks. So keep your eye out for that as well.
Okay, great. I recognized a couple of KTNA volunteer names there, Seth and Holly. Okay, so as we're talking about, we did manage to shut out the seagulls. So. You said there will be additional information as each of those comes up. So, and Joe, you were about to say something?
Yeah, I have two other weeks that are particularly exciting to me. And one is we're going to have a weekend on the politics of food.
Okay.
And we've invited our local politicians to come and be part of a panel discussion about Alaska food resources, how vulnerable the Alaska food source are to exterior sources, and even just more broadly, eating food within a 100-mile radius, the whole social political ideas that surround food. So that will be a focus. And then the one thing I want to make sure gets mentioned is the one that will be our culminating activity on Saturday, September 13th, and that will be the our community wild fish and game and local foods potluck, but will also be part of the, you may have heard of the Iron Chef contest.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're going to have the Cast Iron Chef competition. And this Cast Iron Chef competition will be instead of a frantic runaround event, you get 5 hours to create food. But the one glitch is that it's all over a campfire.
Okay.
So we're inviting teams of people to come together. We'll provide the firewood, and you get 5 hours to prepare a four-course meal. But the one little glitch is that you will be handed a bucket of secret ingredients that will need to be incorporated into this
Interesting.
Meal.
Interesting. And are these things that people would normally eat, or are we looking at, like, innards and the like? Are we going to have some Alaskan haggis come out of this, maybe?
So that's pending, and unfortunately for Joe's circumstance, it's going to be kept a secret to him until he's handed his own bucket.
I see.
He's going to be a competitor, and we are soliciting local chefs to help contribute to the ideas of the contents of the bucket. So if anyone's interested, feel free to contact myself. Do not tell Joe under any circumstance what will be in there. We don't want to give him an unfair advantage, but it's going to be an interesting event nonetheless.
It sounds like it. It sounds like it. We do have another caller. Laura has a comment about local cookbooks. Go ahead, Laura.
Hey there. This is Laura from on the board of the Tuckeetnell Historical Society, and we are having a concurrent exhibit on local cookbooks that I and Susie Kellard have collected. And we'll be exhibiting them, and they're fascinating. They're from the Tuckeetna Homemaker Society, Trapper Creek, Cooking Tonight, all different various fundraising cookbooks. They'll be on display along with selected recipes.
And that'll be going on at the same time?
Yeah, it should be opening around August 1st or 2nd, and it'll be up in the museum and the schoolhouse. And it's been fun to look through it and read back some of the old recipes. I picked out some, and then they'll be copied onto recipe cards, and people can take them with them.
Okay.
So recipes for, like, salmon caviar and, you know, rhubarb refreshment and zucchini bread.
All right.
And the oldest cookbook I have went back to 1979. It's a homemaker's cookbook.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for the info on that, Laura.
All right, thanks. Bye.
And I think the museum will also have a display of Dena'ina food, the pre-contact food. And there will also be one of the Fed Talks is going to be Catherine Krasinski is going to talk. She's leading one of the excavations over in Trapper Creek, and she's going to have a Fed Talk on pre-contact Dena'ina food culture.
Okay,
so that
cool.
should be pretty fascinating as well.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of really great stuff. One of the things you touched on, and I think there's a much broader conversation happening around that right now, at least with a lot of the people I know here locally, is talking about food security. And, I mean, it sounds like that's going to play a role in the events you have scheduled here. So, I mean, where do you see, you know, to me at least, it seems like there are a lot more people now than even when I moved here a few years ago, kind of at least having small gardens, growing their own stuff, doing their own thing. Are there any plans around that for the future at NSI for helping folks with that?
Well, certainly. You know, I think sustainability is one of the key elements of what we hope to develop in the future. I know Larry and I have talked at length about not only energy, small homes, mm-hmm. Gardens, all those kinds of things are arenas that we feel would be important for NSI to support and bring in folks who are experts in those areas.
Okay. We've got about 15 minutes left. Just want to remind everyone, you're listening to Sioux Valley Voice. My guests today are Joe Page and Larry Hutton of NSI. If you want to join in on the conversation, you can do so by giving us a call, 733-1200, or you can send us an email at dj@ktna.org. So I think we've hit a lot of the high points. It sounds like it's going to be, I mean, there's going to be something going on pretty much constantly over there, it sounds like, for this Key Ingredients Festival. So as that, you know, that's going to be going on for 6 weeks. And then kind of what I want to spend the last part of the hour here on is sort of looking forward and seeing what's going on. You know, Larry, you hinted earlier that there are some plans in the works for programs. So if you just want to touch on some of the plans that you have in the works over there.
Absolutely. Well, I'll start that off. We certainly do have a lot of different things forming as we speak, looking toward the future. One project that I've been working particularly on is interesting because it pools the resources of Northern Susitna Institute, Classroom with a View, as well as the Folk School and what would formerly be known as the Seal Academy. And that is, we're looking at bringing students into Talkeetna that are not from the immediate area, the Mat-Su Valley necessarily, mm-hmm. In combination with students that are from the area potentially. And we've been affectionately calling this program Summer in Alaska. Myself being a lower 48er for my entire life thus far until 2 months ago, it was a very exciting endeavor for me to come to Alaska for the first time. And so in that vein, I thought it would be great to be able to offer students from the lower 48 an opportunity to come experience Alaska in the same way that I did. And the basic program is that they would come to Alaska for around a month and experience a myriad of activities, two different job shadowing opportunities, namely one, maybe an opportunity in that experience to come shadow, for instance, the radio station or the aviation industry or the hospitality industry or the fishing industry, things that are unique to the culture of Talkeetna, perhaps that they may not have the opportunity to experience in their home communities. The students would have the opportunity to get some high school credit in the form of doing outdoor courses with Classroom with a View, doing job shadow opportunities with SEAL, as I just discussed, and then getting them out on some adventures, maybe heading up to see the glacier, going on an adventure up on Kasugi Ridge or in the national park. So that's a particular one that I'm very interested in. And as part of that, one thing that we're working particularly hard on is deciding how the students will be housed while they're here. One option we've discussed is having host families.
Okay.
So if anyone's interested in that, we're certainly open to the possibility. It would be for a time period of 2 to 3 weeks. And so it's just something that we're discussing. So that's alive and well. And then, did we already talk about that? Oh, yeah. So our remodel is obviously ongoing. Mm-hmm. One of the big things that we're working on at the moment is, if you're familiar with the Northern Sisseton Institute campus, there's quite a large shop toward the back of the property that we are on the brink of completely remodeling from top to bottom, and have future plans to open that as a community shop where members of the community can come in and work on various projects. We can host Alaska Folk School classes in there. And in fact, if you're ever in the neighborhood, stop by. The rocket mass heater that Joe discussed earlier is a functioning element of that building at the moment, which is very fascinating. If you're interested in that at all, you should come by and have a look at it. But we're planning on completely redoing it literally from the roof to the ground. And so do you have anything else to add to that?
The other exciting news is that next Friday we're going to begin what's called the pre-development. And we've been accepted into the statewide pre-development program, which is organized by a consortium of the Denali Commission, the Rasmussen Foundation, Mattsu Health Foundation, and others. And basically, it guides you through, well, in our particular case, it will guide us through developing a site plan for what we want the 3 acres to look like over the next, 50 years.
Okay.
And so next Friday, we're launching that. And basically, we have way too many ideas, but none of them are locked in. And I think we'll have experts, we'll have professional engineers and architects work with us to help us envision what we think might be on the 3 acres right there. So that's very, very exciting. The concept behind this is that once you have the plan in place, then it makes it a whole lot easier to get funding for
right.
it. Because if you have the backing of these organizations, you realize that when an opportunity comes along, you're ready to submit your proposal.
Right, and that does seem to be a growing trend, is that, speaking as someone who works at one nonprofit and volunteers at a few others, mm-hmm. that does definitely seem to be a growing trend, is that desire for long-term plans. And kind of on that subject, too, I hadn't necessarily planned on talking about this, but it might be an interesting time to bring it in, is there's been some ongoing discussions between nonprofits in the area. Especially those who own property, including this one, KT&A, has taken part in Denali Arts Council and Historical Society. And can you just briefly outline, because it's kind of along the same lines, talking about things that funders are looking for. So what's going on with that?
Well, this is pretty exciting. I think we referenced earlier that there were 41 or 42 nonprofits
right.
in the area. And really, that's not sustainable. We feel like there's a way for the nonprofit world to get together and discuss how we can share resources better. And that could be, I think we've used the expression, everything from sharing a lawnmower to sharing staff.
Mm.
We go into this with no preconceived notion of what the outcome should be, but it feels important that we have the discussion in our community. The fact that we have 41 nonprofits means that people have a lot of passion about a lot of different things, which is super exciting, and I think that's one of the attractions of our community. But at the same time, going back, that's not sustainable because there'll be people who burn out. The funding, people don't, you want to give funding to every single place you turn, but, you know, the resources aren't there. So we have, we're in the process of working together to try to figure out better ways to share these resources. And there's a process involved that we hope will, it'll probably take us a couple of years to get through it, but I think it's an important thing to go to work on.
Yeah, it also means there's 41 boards that need members around town.
Right.
And as you know, anyone who's lived here long enough, or it doesn't take long at all, as it turns out, and gets involved in the community at all, you start getting hit up for boards really fast. Larry, if you haven't encountered that yet, you will in the very near future, I can promise you. So, okay. Well, yeah, I just, you know, that's, like I said, that's something that KTNA has been involved with as well in those discussions. And, thought it might be interesting to share that with the community as well. So, yeah, obviously it's not a quick process. Anytime you're talking, because you have to start with the concept. What do we actually want to do? And then you can start thinking about how to do it. So, but this isn't just happening. Like, the plan is not for this not just to be a conversation between all the local groups, though, right?
No, I think we're going to try to engage some outside assistance to help facilitate this process and help us, you know, look at some models, other places that have consolidated. And, you know, I think the process might, we don't know what the outcome is going to be.
Right.
It could be that we like it the way that it is, or, you know, I can't envision really personally a super board with all 41 organizations under that. But I mean, those are the extremes.
I can't imagine anyone wanting to be on that board.
Yeah, exactly. I know people would run fast away. So anyway, but it's an important discussion to have. I think one of the things we've engaged Dennis McMillan, who's the president of the Foraker Group, and he came up, and we hope to have him come back, and we'll certainly make everybody in the community know when he is returning to talk about why this is not sustainable. Mm-hmm. And he has an excellent presentation that really provides that background. You know, demographics, you know, us old geezers in the boomer generation, there are more of us. And so, you know, Larry, you and Philip are of the next generation. There aren't so many of you guys. And, you know, so, you know, if you look at boards, usually, you know, boards are made up of people in the 50 to 70 range.
Right.
And, you know, when they move on, something's got to give there. And so, you know, we're trying to look into the future and figure it
out. Okay. So we've got just a couple of minutes left. Did want to come back one more time and hit on the Key Ingredients Festival. You mentioned that during that six-week period, there's going to be staff and volunteers involved in helping folks go through that. If people want to help out with that, if they want to volunteer, what's the best way to go about that?
Yeah, so they can feel free to always stop by NSI. We're usually there most days, Monday through Friday, during business hours. And in particular, we are looking for volunteers to staff, as I mentioned earlier, the standing exhibit at NSI and act as docents for the guests that will be coming through. We'll also have a small retail area where we'll be selling local crafts, cookbooks, and opportunities for guests to take part in fish printing activities and things of that nature. So there are never a shortage of volunteer opportunities at NSI on a standing basis, but particularly for the 6 weeks of Key Ingredients, we are looking for some help over there. So
okay, great. Yeah, it's often the same way here. We're never turn away a volunteer, right? So and then I guess most people probably know, but maybe not everybody does. The property there is the old church building there across from East 2nd Street.
And right next to the free box.
To the free box. And only a stone's throw away from KTNA. So, and then if they want to call, what's the number to call?
So our number there is 733-7111. And also always available on the web at northernsusitnainstitute.org.
Great.
And also keep your eye out. We've got a new website launching very soon.
Well, that's so exciting.
It's very exciting.
Got to stay up with the 21st century. So. Well, that is just about all the time we've got for today. I'd like to thank my guests, Joe Page and Larry Hutton. You've been listening to Sioux Valley Voice. If you missed part of the show or if you want to listen again, you can tune in at 7 o'clock tonight or listen online anytime at ktna.org. The next Sioux Valley Voice will air live at 10 a.m. on Wednesday, July 30th. I'm Philip Manning. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.